Welcome to the Solid Verbal. The Solid Verbal.
Welcome to the most prestigious award show in all of college football podcasting. It's the 5th annual Verbies. The stars are already arriving. Well, well, if it isn't Tommy Reese. Word is, he's throwing the after party. Let's just hope it's not intercepted. Heyo, it's Mac Brown. You tell him who's number one, coach. Even if it is with your middle finger. Oh my, who invited Jen Bielema? Oh, is she with Barry Alvarez? Hashtag awkward. Now walking the carpet, Will Muschamp. Congrats, coach. This is the most yards you've gained all year. And now it's Charlie Strong. Hey, Charlie, a quick interview. Okay, maybe another time. But we know one guy that's willing to interview. Our pal Jim Mora Jr. is here. Ooh, looking sharp, Coach Petrino. Good call on hiring a chauffeur. You just never know. Why, it's Lane Kiffin. Hold on to your valet tickets, folks. It'll make his job easier after the show. Oh, and look up there. It's Joe Southwick on the observation deck. Hey there, Joe. Oh, wait, what's he doing? Hey, can somebody get Southwick off the balcony? And now, here are your hosts, Ty Hildenbrandt and Dan Rubenstein.
Welcome, boys and girls, to the 5th annual Verbie Awards. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt. I am joined by my friend, my colleague of many years. His name is Dan Rubenstein in blustery New York City. Hello, Dan.
Ty, how you doing? Exciting night.
It's a regal night in the history of the podcast.
It really is. The stars are out. People are excited. Everybody's wearing makeup. Everybody's in their tuxes and their ball gowns. The who's who, the glitterati, are here and ready to soak in the energy.
We also have a special video clip that our friend Lex Steele put together
for in 3D.
What a way to kick off our season. I was just thinking about this on the plane ride back.
Yeah.
What a way to kick off our 6th full season of doing the podcast with Lex Steele coming on to give us his college football pick.
We've done so many shows this season. Clearly a fitting way to start an orgy of college football content, if you will.
I like what you did there.
Really banging out that first episode, I felt like was a strong push. We went real inside football with that first episode.
And then after that episode, we were just sort of thrust into the season, right?
Yeah. Really, really, really coming hard into that.
See, you went there. I wasn't going to go there, but you did it.
Into that football mindset in August.
Welcome to the Verbies. Here's the way this thing works. A couple years ago, Dan and I, clearly at that point, with nothing better to do with our time, because we were podcasting, of course.
Right.
We also decided it would be a good idea to invent our own award show. At the time, the Herbie Awards, the Herbies from Kirk Herbstreit on ESPN, they were sort of coming into their own. It became a preseason thing. And you very astutely pointed out that, hey, we could have the Verbie Awards. And so we tried it, and it has continued to evolve over the years. Over the last couple years now, it's turned into a full-on interaction between us and our fan base. People nominate not only who should be up for some of these awards, but also the awards themselves. Then we hold a vote, which we had for a couple weeks at the end of 2013, and now I have the results before us here today. So we have, I didn't even count up how many awards we have, like maybe 10 or 11 awards here.
It's a prestigious evening. Yeah, no, we're spanning all sorts of different avenues of college football with, I would say, the most influential postseason award coverage in college football.
Yeah, of course.
I would say so. Yeah,
absolutely.
No, it is a prolific year of awards on the Verbies. Who are you wearing tonight?
I am currently wearing, let me look at this. I am wearing a sweater.
What color? This is theater of the mind. Paint a picture.
It is a burnt orange sweater, actually.
Oh, wow.
It says Express on the back. It is Express.
Express. Okay, yes. Ty is wearing Express.
What are you wearing?
I am wearing a hoodie right now. It's an olive green hoodie from Uniqlo.
Wow, okay.
A store in New York.
We dressed up for the occasion.
We did indeed.
I have khakis on. I came here right from work.
That's a bit of a bummer.
Yeah.
I'm still at work.
Yeah.
But no, I feel like khakis, you're not wearing basketball shorts and a cutoff shirt. You're taking it seriously.
Yeah. No, I am. I respect the verbies and the reverence that comes with. Anyway, with all that said, a perfect segue into awkward broadcasting moment of the year. Your four nominees, numero uno, Bill Murray tackling Lee Corso on College Game Day. Remember that, Dan?
That was fantastic. It was, I don't even say a it was like a suplex.
It was
a backbreaker.
Suplex.
It was amazing. It felt a little bit forced. I don't know how that was all set up. If it was just impromptu, it was terrific. And what's Lee Corso going to do? Not play along?
Yeah.
But it was a terrific moment.
I felt like Bill Murray had planned it in advance, but Lee Corso didn't. Lee Corso was not expecting that.
It was a fantastic moment.
Numero dos. Kirk Herbstreit drawing blood from Lee Corso. Lee Corso got roughed up this year on game day.
He did. It was a rough year, but he's a trooper. At his advanced age, to be attacked, to be bloody. A couple years ago, you had swearing. I feel like he really is hitting his stride.
Trace, is that three in Spanish?
Yes, tres.
David Pollack's comments on Condi Rice. Now, here was the here was the controversy. As we saw, David Pollack, around the time of the announcement that Condi Rice, former Secretary of State under George W. Bush, that she was going to be on that playoff committee, David Pollack came out and made some comments that, well, they weren't very veiled. He just made it known that he didn't think a woman should be on that committee.
Yeah, it was, why would you have a woman on this committee?
Right,
why would you, you know... It should be all former players. It should be all football.
And then Pat Dye made some asinine comment. You know, good times. Good times. And then number four, Eminem's interview on Saturday Night Football. It was during the Notre Dame-Michigan game. They had Eminem up in the booth to talk about his new album at halftime. He was up there with Brent Musburger, Kirk Herbstreit. It was awkward because Eminem did the weird staring thing that he did from his Berserk video. So he claimed. Brent Musburger asked him about point spreads, which was a little weird, but pretty much right on par. If I'm voting, and I did vote, this was the one that I voted for.
I'm uncomfortable just listening to you describe that moment.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm uncomfortable, even though Eminem tried to play it off as if he was being weird on purpose. It was very odd. And then, of course, throughout the whole season, it was forced to have the Berserk video played with college football. It was just... uncomfortable all around.
Yeah, and you know, you could make a point that maybe he was doing the thing from the music video, or also maybe he was hopped up on like eight different kinds of drugs.
I'm not going to comment on that specifically, but sure, yeah, that sounds reasonable.
Again, Eminem in his interview, David Pollack in his comments, Bill Murray's tackling of Lee Corso, Kirk Herbstreit, and the sword fight against Lee Corso. Ladies and gentlemen, dim the lights.
Ooh, here it is.
The award for awkward broadcasting moment of the year goes to Eminem, his interview on Saturday Night Football.
Yeah.
A verby well earned.
It was pretty easily earned with the voting, as it turned out.
Oh, yeah. There was
more than tripled the second place, the runner-up here.
There was only one other category in which it was this lopsided, and we'll get to that later on in the show. Let's move on very quickly now to Worst Year Back.
Worst Year Back.
This is an award we started, I want to say, 1 or 2 years ago. It was, again, one of our nominations from the Verballers who came to SolidVerbal.com and picked their categories. Worst Year Back goes to the guy who basically did the most to lower his stock moving forward. So it doesn't necessarily need to be a guy entering the NFL draft. It could be a guy coming back next season. It could also be a team or an entity or maybe even a coach. So we try not to put too much restriction around these awards, because quite frankly, we're all making it up as we go along.
Absolutely.
Your four nominations for Worst Year Back.
This was hotly contested.
It really was. Number one, Devin Gardner, quarterback at Michigan, Dan.
Fair enough, especially with the way that the season started with his UConn and Akron games. You know, a lot of expectations with him fully taking over, finishing 2012 pretty strong. Devin Gardner has to be there.
Number two, Tommy Rees from Notre Dame.
Yes, an unexpected candidate thrust into the spotlight in a starting role.
I was not a Tommy Rees fan. You know this.
Right.
But Tommy Rees, to his credit, did throw for over 3,200 yards and had 27 touchdowns this year. He's not winning the Heisman, and he's not right. making an NFL team next year. But that's not the worst possible season out there. You could do a lot worse. And again, to his credit, this is the best season he's had at Notre Dame since coming there and playing a little bit back in 2010. So this wasn't the worst year back for Tommy Rees. This was actually his best year back.
If I may interject, Pinstripe Bowl champion.
Oh, that excuse
quarterback
me.
Tommy Rees.
Is that what the PR people now are sending out for Rees?
Pinstripe Bowl champion.
Let's move on. Another quarterback candidate. This would have been my vote, by the way, without a doubt. Logan Thomas, quarterback, Virginia Tech. We made the joke on our live show last fall about how Mel Kiper headed into the 2012 season had initially, very preliminarily, placed Logan Thomas atop his big board headed into that season.
Yeah.
It fell apart a bit for Logan Thomas last year.
Still number one on mine.
Didn't come apart quite to the degree it did last year, at least not in terms of quarterback rating in 2013. But Logan Thomas had another really underwhelming season at Virginia Tech. Didn't have a lot of help, but clearly was not living up to that billing. He would have been my vote here. I probably would have gone with Logan Thomas.
Yeah, it's hard. There's a number of people that, I mean, for all sorts of a variety of reasons, injuries, you know, losses along offensive and defensive lines. It's tough to argue.
And then finally, Jadeveon Clowney.
It was disappointing considering the offseason of conversation that we were certainly a part of with Clowney. But I think there were a number of factors. He was getting double and triple teamed. Every single offensive line's attention, offense's attention, the way they were running plays, it was all centered around Jadeveon Clowney. It's just like if a cornerback doesn't put up huge, you know, passes defended or interception numbers, they could be thrown away from. Doesn't make them any worse, but the raw numbers and excitement of crazy plays just wasn't there with Clowney, certainly.
Yeah, numbers were down in terms of total tackles when compared to last season. Only had 3 sacks compared to 13 from a year ago. But as you mentioned, got a lot more attention, was battling through some injuries.
Yep.
There were a whole number of different things. There may have been some malaise there on the part of Clowney, given the fact that he knew he was going to be guaranteed a top 5 NFL draft pick in the 2014 draft. I guess we will never know. Those, again, are your 4 nominations. Logan Thomas, Tommy Rees, Devin Gardner, and Jadeveon Clowney. Again, Daniel, let's dim the lights.
Damn it, dim those lights.
Your winner, the Verbi for worst year back, goes to?
May I read the envelope?
Here's the envelope. Take the envelope. Please read it.
Jadeveon Clowney.
Jadeveon Clowney. Wow.
Wow. Okay.
Congratulations. Now, this was a tight vote. I mean,
it was.
We had more votes in this Verbi's season than ever before. Only 13 votes between Jadeveon Clowney and Devin Gardner.
Would you put somebody else in this 4? I mean, these are obviously the final 4 nominees. Was there anybody that you had in mind that is not one of these 4 names?
My name was Logan Thomas. When I
of everybody in college football.
Right. When I put this category on the website, the one that I would have put on here, and there are a few nominees on here, by the way, that I just went in and added them because I knew we talked a lot about them. Logan Thomas, for me, is a guy I would have added had he not been suggested. You know, I mean, I'm Notre Dame centric, like George Atkinson. He's not a big enough name to be on this list, but George Atkinson had a horrible season.
I would say Brett Bielema coming back in 2013 to coach college football once again.
Or
Jen
Bielema. You could
Jen
throw her
Bielema,
in there.
not the best year back as a college football wag.
Sure.
I mean, he still led his team to a bowl game. He was fine. It's not his fault. Everybody hyped him up.
Yeah.
All right.
Worst year back, Jadeveon Clowney. Congratulations.
Jadeveon Clowney. All right.
Let's move on. Here's a fun one. Crime of the year.
Bum 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 bow 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 bow. Sorry.
Your nominees. Crime of the year.
Mm.
The officiating in the Wisconsin-Arizona State game.
Okay. That was certainly criminal.
Not criminal in the way that the others on this list are criminal.
Right.
But in a college football context, Dan, this is pretty damn criminal, I think.
It felt like a crime was committed on the field in Tempe.
For those who are wondering what happened in Tempe, basically, with about 18 seconds left, Joel Stave, quarterback at Wisconsin, had Wisconsin. He had marched them down the field. He had them in field goal range. He mm-hmm. tried to center the ball by snapping it, running to the center of the field, and taking a knee. Turns out that the knee... did we ever get clarity if the knee actually hit the ground?
The refs certainly didn't find clarity in the knee hitting the ground. It appeared to. He did it very quickly. It wasn't a very deliberate knee on the part of Wisconsin and Stave. It could have been more deliberate and more force, yes.
Of course. And so whatever happened there, he sort of put the ball down. Arizona right. State saw the same thing that the television audience saw. It didn't look like the knee was down, but at the same time, he gave himself up. So what's the call?
Right.
Arizona State just took the ball, and it confused the refs because the refs didn't know what to do. All the while, right. tick, 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 the clock is moving.
Mm-hmm.
By the time the referees finally get a chance to reset the football, time had expired. Arizona State came away with a game that, at the time, we joked had fallen off the back of a truck.
Yep.
It was a great game. Wisconsin probably should have won.
Mm-hmm.
They end up losing. That is your first nomination, the officiating in the
yes.
Wisconsin-ASU game.
Next!
Numero dos!
We need to power through these. We got a lot.
Antonio Morrison from Florida. Arrested for barking at a police dog. Always a bright move.
We've been there.
Who hasn't?
We've been there. When we were at the national championship game in Florida last year, that's just what people do. We were there. We lived it. We understand. Still hilarious.
Number three, Joe Southwick from Boise State, sent home from the Hawaii Bowl for allegedly, we don't know if this is for certain or not. He took a lie
right.
detector, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
That claimed he didn't do
and
it.
And passed it.
Passed, yeah, he passed
that
it.
Detector, yeah.
Southwick sent home from the Hawaii Bowl for allegedly peeing off a balcony.
Yeah. Do we know what floor it was?
We don't know.
You ever pee off a balcony, Ty?
I have not. I had someone pee off one of my balconies.
Really?
In college, off of a seventh floor balcony.
Powerful stream?
I did not watch, no.
Okay.
Nor was I sure. underneath, thankfully.
Okay.
Finally, Pharaoh Brown from Oregon suspended for his role.
Yes.
In a snowball fight.
It happens. It was more than, it was like a snow boulder that he was aligning himself with the professor's car.
It happens.
Yeah, it happens.
Dim the lights.
Dim them.
Your winner, crime of the year, the Verbi goes to, who gets the Verbi, Dan?
Officiating at Wisconsin ASU.
Wow. You know
yeah.
what?
Okay.
They earned it, Dan. They really earned it.
I don't believe it was Pac-12 officials because it was a non-conference game. But anytime you get on that West Coast, you're taking matters into weird hands
yeah.
with officiating in college football.
You
right.
are. Congratulations.
ASU.
Congratulations. At least Wisconsin gets something out of that game.
Yes.
Congratulations on the Verbi guys. All right. Alternate uniform of the year. People get...
Yeah.
All hot and bothered when you start talking alternate uniforms, Dan.
Yeah, people really do. People are sexually attracted to uniform conversation.
Alternate uniform. Alternate uniform of the year.
Here are your nominations.
What was your number one Notre Dame alternate uniform of the past couple years?
I like the Shamrock Series uniform that they wore. I believe...
That was... What was the Shamrock Series? That was the 2/3 gold and blue?
I didn't like
helmet.
That one. The one that I liked was where they had the whites with like the double stripe in green around like
right.
the upper arm.
Sure.
The gold helmet and the green shamrock.
Okay.
Two Oregon nominations on here, Dan.
Well, I mean.
I think they split the vote. I think they killed themselves. If you add those two together, maybe they have more of a shot in this category. Neither one ended up winning.
And I don't know if, I mean, one of them was definitely an alternate. The other one was just a combination. It wasn't a special uniform.
True.
Um, But yeah, and you didn't ask, but my favorite Oregon uniform of the year.
What was your favorite Oregon uniform of the year, Dan?
I liked the all yellows. I also liked what they revealed, and this is probably just a new uniform going forward, in the Alamo Bowl against Texas. That new look. I like that fresh new look, some sort of new shades. I like that very much.
Yeah. No, they do a good job up there. The problem, in terms of Verby's voting, though,
yeah,
two on the list. Oregon fans could not unite behind a common cause.
All right. Random order, Ty. Please give me the nominations.
Hawaii's rainbow uniforms.
I enjoyed these.
They were good.
They became just the Warriors instead of the Rainbow Warriors. I like the throwback.
Tennessee's smoky grays.
I'm a sucker for gray.
Yeah.
I've liked it. Oklahoma State going gray. I liked Washington State going gray. I like the gray look. I like the sort of matte gray. It's a cool alternate. Reminds me of sort of baseball away uniforms. I'm for it.
And finally, Baylor's black and chrome uniforms.
Baylor's done a good job. Baylor and Oklahoma State have really sort of taken on the mantle with Maryland as being the Oregon of a different territory. And Baylor's chrome looked great. A lot better than I think Washington's did.
Gun to your head, Dan.
Yeah.
And then we'll announce the winner of this category. Gun to your head, with Oregon being assumed as the number one in terms of uniform power ranking. Give me two, three, and four.
Not of these nominations, just in general in college football.
Yep.
2, 3, and 4. I really like, because I'm a sucker for white. It sounds very racist.
Yeah, that's racist.
It sounds very. I really like the white, like going all white and all black. So I like the stormtrooper look. So the classic Texas when they're in all white, not the orange, not the burnt orange.
Texas
The road Texas uniforms, I think, are really sharp. Because I just like the minimalist, which is the Longhorn. I don't know. I'm a sucker for that. I like that a lot. I'm trying to think.
I would throw Boise State in there. They have a pretty strong uniform.
I think
game.
You know whose uniforms I've liked a lot is and it's very similar to the Boise State uniforms. Mizzou's new overhaul.
Yes, good.
Big
call.
Fan of Mizzou and their overhaul. The Texas one is classic and the old fashioned. I'm trying to think anybody else across. You know what I've liked? I like. And they sort of fit together, and I'm not sure if they're Adidas or not, whatever it is. A couple of the Indiana new helmet and combo looks.
They're trying out there. Kevin Wilson's trying some stuff.
And I like the sort of Texas Tech experimentation and loving.
Okay.
I'm a fan.
Alternate uniform.
I like the Masked Rider helmet, I think, is pretty sharp.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Alternate uniform of the year again. Baylor, Hawaii, Tennessee, and two Oregons. Your winner is, drumroll please. Winner is Baylor's black and chrome.
Yeah.
Congratulations, guys.
Well deserves.
You know, couldn't win that Fiesta Bowl game. Baylor loses Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
Here's something that you win. Congratulations.
It really helps that the style of the uniform really fit in with the style of play.
Yeah.
The flashiness, the glitz, the offense, the points, the fun of watching those shiny helmets zooming around the Big 12. It's a good match.
Moving on, random factoid that may only interest Tom Hammond.
Who I don't believe is calling college football games anymore.
Random factoid that may only interest Tom Hammond.
Random factoid that may only interest Tom Hammond
of the year.
I came to a pivotal moment here.
You miss him a little bit. You hate miss him.
I hate miss him, yeah. I hate that I can't complain about him anymore. Tom Hammond, of course, is the retired... Now, former commentator for Notre Dame on NBC, he called games for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
For a long time, I thought Tom Hammond went to Notre Dame, and then I found out he went to Kentucky. And for whatever reason, that combined with this commentary just sort of enraged me. So for the first like 4 years of this show, Tom Hammond was a huge point of contention. This year, Hammond goes away. They bring in Dan Hicks all as well.
Yep.
We came to a pivotal moment. What do we do with this Verby Award?
You have to honor your guy.
See, that was my thought. You have to try and keep Verby lore in Verby lore. So the random factoids you will hear in about 2 seconds are still ones that may only interest Tom Hammond. Can't speak for anybody else.
Right.
Number one, Lane Kiffin, did you know, turned down Taj Boyd and Bryce Petty for scholarships. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Again, random facts, things that you hear on the commentary that are like, huh, that's interesting. And then are beaten to death.
Right.
Number two, Zach Mettenberger and Aaron Murray. Did you know they were once roommates?
Yes, I did.
Number three, Jameis Winston wanted to go to Texas. That would have been a coup for Texas.
That.
Good for them.
Yeah.
And while we're on that note, number four, Mac Brown recruited Johnny Manziel as a defensive back.
Yes, he did.
Defensive back, Dan. He won the Heisman.
What do you think was the most played out broadcasting trope like this over the past? So since the Brady Quinn, AJ Hawk, because that I feel like really
that was like the epitome.
Ushered in the modern era
of
we need to mention this every 4.5 minutes. So since that happened. So if it's the what's it called? The Brady Quinn's sister award. What was her first name? And probably still is.
Laura Quinn.
Laura Quinn.
Yeah.
So if this is the Laura Quinn Memorial Tom Hammond, she's probably still alive, award. Since then, between the 2013 season and then, I mean, is it the Zach Maynard and Keenan Allen are brothers? Is it what's his name was 6'7"?
Brock Osweiler being 6'8" is a really tough nominee in this category.
I mean, you have Jordan Shipley and Colt McCoy, being roommates.
Yep.
That's a big one. The roommate thing is pretty big. You have Tim Tebow and who was it, Riley Cooper being roommates?
Riley Cooper.
That one's pretty big. Later on this season, and it didn't make it in just because we were doing Verby stuff before, he really came into the forefront. Trey Mason's father being in De La Soul.
No.
That was a big hit later on.
I forgot about that one. Yeah.
You did forget? Yeah.
But that was a good one.
That was sort of like when... Yeah, that was...
Oh man, that was a good. How about Catherine Webb? That was overplayed.
Yeah, Catherine Webb, and yeah, it wasn't as much this season, but it was the national championship game last year was great.
All right, again, random factoids that may only interest Tom Hammond.
Just may.
You've heard him a million times, but Tom Hammond is the only one still interested. Zach Mettenberger and Aaron Murray being once roommates. Mac Brown recruiting Johnny Manziel as a defensive back. Lane Kiffin turning down Taj Boyd and Bryce Petty. Jameis Winston wanting to go to Texas. Dim the lights.
Dim those lights.
Your winner for random factoid that may only interest Tom Hammond. Congratulations, Zach Mettenberger.
Oh, yeah.
And Aaron Murray. Congratulations, guys. Did you know they were once roommates, Dan?
I did know that.
They can share this award now.
I remember, this is how old I am, Ty.
Yeah.
I remember looking at, I don't know, maybe it was before one of the shows we were doing. I feel like we were doing a show back then when Zach Mettenberger and Aaron Murray were in the same class
at
Georgia. And it was like Aaron, I don't know if it was scout or rivals. I was looking at the list and it was just the quarterbacks list. It was like, oh, Aaron Murray's the number 4 quarterback. Zach Mettenberger is the number 7 quarterback. Yep. One of these dudes is going to transfer.
Yep.
That's just what happens. And maybe you should have looked at a school in which you are not competing. And this could have been to either one of them because they're both coming out of their college careers as accomplished, desirable professionals. I was like, wow, that's going to be dumb. Somebody's going to waste some time.
You know, in hindsight.
Yeah.
Moving forward, if we created like a Gunnar Kiel inevitable transfer award. Zach Mettenberger could be on the all-time list. Obviously, Gunnar Kiel did it. There are commitments you can see coming from a mile away that you're just
absolutely
not going to last. I'm putting that one in. I'm going to write it down right now. We're doing that next
year.
We saw
that with Florida State. Jacob Coker is now going to Alabama.
Yep, Alabama.
Pretty obvious. I think that was sort of the worst kept secret. Zach Klein came in and then was immediately beat out by another 4-star quarterback the following year. Like, well, Zach Klein's a transfer man walking.
Someone could end up transferring from USC at quarterback.
Absolutely.
I would expect someone to be honest.
If Cody Kessler has a good year this year, Max Brown's gone.
He's gone, yeah. So you can see it coming from a mile away.
Yeah.
Congratulations in the interim, though, to Zach Mettenberger, Aaron Murray, once being roommates. Again, that's your random factoid that mainly interests Tom Hammond. Moving on, one of our favorite categories. We do it every year. Last year, we sought the console of one Andy Staples to help us sort through all the nominations that we received. It's Name of the Year, Dan.
Name of the Year.
The naughty, if you will, the N-O-T-Y.
That's right. Here are your nominations. Chris Blewett, I believe a kicker from Pitt. Chris Blewett, that's spelled B-L-E-W-I-T-T, Blewett. again, he is a kicker. On the same kicker note, Jack Russell, another nominee in this category.
The Terrier.
The Terrier. He is a punter from Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
Two special teamers in the name of the year category.
He's a great one. I remember watching a Wisconsin game when I was on the road this year with some non-football fans, and they just sort of saw his name come up. A bunch of friends of mine from work, actually, from The Verge. And it's one of those things where it takes like 3 seconds. Like, wait, is his name? Did they just say? Because it's not one of those things that immediately strikes you with some of these other names that we've discussed over the years where it's just so ridiculous. Like God's power offer. Immediately you're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Jack Russell's one of those slow burns. It was like, wait a minute. I've heard that. Like the, wow, really? I like that.
Another one on the list, Win Homer, an offensive lineman from, I believe, Boston College.
Yep.
An interesting name. It finished last in this category. I'll tell you that much. But Win Homer.
Right.
It could be an SEC name. I'll just leave it at that. Chongo Condolo.
I was surprised you had this on the list of nominees.
I didn't make it up.
I know, but I just know that I'm surprised that you left it on here because I know you're very close with Chongo Hildenbrandt.
Right, of course.
A cousin of yours, so you didn't want to make a big deal.
Didn't want to make him feel self-conscious about it.
Right, like Chongo is like the new Taylor in terms of like hot baby names.
It happens, continue. You know. Clinton Dix.
Yes.
It's as funny as it sounds. It's actually Hashawn Clinton Dix. Ha ha. Just the nickname. But Hashawn Clinton Dix in this category. Munchie Legault, an old friend from Cincinnati.
Yep.
And then Wave Rider from Navy.
Yeah, with a Y.
Let me repeat.
Rider with a Y.
Wave Rider with a Y playing at Navy.
They fight on sea.
Dim the lights, Dan.
At sea. Lights are dimmed. I'm taking off my pants.
Name of the year. The Verbi for name of the year goes to Daniel.
Wave Rider.
Wave Rider.
Yeah.
Congratulations. You know, this was the second straight year Munchie Legault was nominated and came in something other than first.
Honored just to be nominated. He's had a terrific time with the shrimp cocktail and the service at the award show. Great, great gift basket. Thank you for coming, Munchie.
Dan, tonight's special Verbi show brought to you by our good friends at Hulu Plus.
Oh, I was on there this morning.
You've probably tried Hulu.com before. Hulu Plus is so much more.
Yep.
You can watch your favorite shows anytime, anywhere.
Yep.
You can watch thousands, not hundreds, not teens, thousands of hit TV shows and movies in the living room or on the go with your smartphone or tablet. You can watch all your favorite shows. Again, TV shows like SNL, Jimmy Kimmel Live, Shark Tank, which I was just watching last night. Great show. And of course, a favorite of the Solid Verbal, Mrs. Kerry Washington and Scandal.
See, I missed New Girl last night. Fired up the Hulu Plus on the PS3. Boom. Right there this morning. Drank my coffee. Watched some New Girl. Great app.
You can do the same for shows like Lost, Law & Order SVU, Doctor Who, and Community. You can also check out exclusive behind the curtain content, including Hulu originals like The Wrong Mans and Behind the Mask, which is a new docuseries from Hulu that takes you inside the world of sports mascots. You will get exclusive access to a collection of ad-free movies and kids content. You can get all of that for only $7.99 a month. Catch up on all your currents, binge on the old favorites, catch a great movie, stream it all as often as you want, whenever you want, to pretty much whatever device you want, Dan. Right now, you can try it for free on us for 2 weeks. Go to HuluPlus.com/verbal. That's a special offer just for our listeners. Make sure you use HuluPlus.com/verbal so you get the extended free trial and so that they know we sent you. One more time, HuluPlus.com, Dan. /verbal extended 2 week free trial.
Easy call.
All right. I'm cracking my knuckles here.
Oh.
We got a big one coming up now. I'm excited for this one. Rolling up the sleeves, not coach of the year.
Not coach of the year.
Oh, this is a big hotly contested,
no doubt. Not coach of the year, given annually to the worst coach of the year, pretty much.
Yeah, that's accurate.
You're not coach of the year. Here are your nominees. Will Muschamp, University of Florida.
It's really hard to beat Will Muschamp. Because it's really easy to beat Will Muschamp.
That, in a nutshell, is what this came down to. Florida went 4-8.
Yeah.
This past season, missed a bowl. Will Muschamp keeps his job. Many think this next season will be make or break for Will Muschamp. The offense regressed. They had a lot of injuries. If they can get healthy next year, we'll see what happens with Florida. They still have
top,
a ton of
top
talent.
Quarterback coming in.
Sure, they have a ton of talent. Will Muschamp is going to have a chance to right the ship, but he is rightfully on this not coach of the year.
I will say to all those haters that thought Will Muschamp was going to go 3-9 this season.
Yeah.
He showed you. Take that.
Another one on the list, Mac Brown, not coach of the year.
You know, I actually thought he did a pretty good job this year.
After
all things considered.
After the BYU game.
Right.
After the BYU game, when they fired Manny Diaz.
They didn't have a terrific showing against Ole Miss either.
They didn't.
But to sort of steady that ship to the point where they were in the Big 12 championship race until the last week of the season, and they lost to a better Baylor team on the road. So I don't fully agree with this nomination, but I get it because it was sort of a disaster of a season administratively for Mac Brown at times.
Administratively at times, certainly towards the end.
Yes, certainly towards the point where he was forced out of the job. Yes.
But after the BYU game, you're right. Mm-hmm. There was a reason that Mac Brown did not do very well in this balloting. And I think it's because after the BYU game, despite all the jokes and despite all the numbers that we saw being put up in that game, he did right the ship. They simplified the defense. They got rid of Manny Diaz. They put it together, and they definitely united, and they had a chance at the Big 12. So Mac Brown's on this list. I don't know
next.
If it's deserved or not, but a combination nominee of Brady Hoke and Al Borges.
Borges, yeah.
What do you think of that?
Not a good season,
especially
for Al Borges and also for Brady Hoke. Offensive line struggled at times, and the hallmark of what Brady Hoke has long wanted to do and has done at the college level has been play physical ground football, and Michigan unable to do that for pretty much the entire year. It was a nice showing, at least through the air, to finish out the season or finish out the regular season against Ohio State in a close loss, but not ideal for Al Borges and taking this offense forward with a somewhat experienced quarterback, somewhat experienced offensive line, skill, talent on offense. Really underwhelming year if you were looking for Michigan to take a step forward in the department of points and offensive fun.
One of those two, by the way, no longer with Michigan, Al Borges.
No.
Seeking work elsewhere, Doug Nussmeier brought in from Alabama, one of the bigger offseason moves. Staying in the Big Ten, another nominee, Mr. Bo Pelini, a mainstay on this list, I think.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
All he does is lose 4 games every year and win 8 or 9. That's all he does.
Lane Kiffin on the list. Hello, Lane.
I disagree with this. Not that Lane Kiffin shouldn't be on the list, but that there should be other nominees other than Lane Kiffin and Will Muschamp. I disagree with the fact that it took you like 5 names to get to Lane Kiffin.
Just a gunfight at sundown between Lane Kiffin and Will Muschamp feels about right.
Yeah.
And then Brett Bielema.
Hashtag karma.
A disastrous first year at Arkansas. Knew it would take a little while to build things up in his in his image, okay, but did not go according to plan, at least through one season so far in the SEC.
But through 3 games, I believe Arkansas was undefeated.
Do you remember me in the early part of the year with Alex Collins? I had like a thing for Alex Collins in the beginning
and
of the year.
Rightfully so. I mean, they played not really anybody, but it was I remember... I don't think you were just the only one culpable. We were like, well, Arkansas, maybe they can run the ball. Like, our voices got higher.
Yeah,
a lot.
No, I do that all the time.
We were, they can figure something out. Yeah, no, they couldn't.
Those are your nominees, again, not coach of the year. Lane Kiffin, Will Muschamp, Brady Hoke, and Al Borges, Bo Pelini, Mac Brown, and Brett Bielema. Dim the lights.
Dim those lights. I don't know why we're dimming lights, but we're really making this dramatic. I like it.
Your winner, not coach of the year, the Verby goes to...
Big one.
Lane Kiffin, come on.
Lane!
Congratulations, Mr. Kiffin. They pulled him off the team bus to fire him.
Yeah, unceremoniously. Or in a weird way, ceremoniously.
That's like out of The Godfather right there.
Yeah.
Off the bus, off the team. Thanks for playing. Lane Kiffin now lands on his feet, mind you. Guy's got 9 lives, fails up, now ends up being the offensive coordinator at Alabama. So good for him. You know, if you like Lane Kiffin, if you like Alabama, you want him to do well?
Sure.
I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
Let's do that.
Host meme of the year.
Host meme. Host meme of the year.
I want to say something real quick.
Yeah.
We just gave an award for not coach of the year, and it didn't go to Will Muschamp.
A small victory for Will Muschamp.
Small victory. And just, you know, credit Lane Kiffin there. Or don't.
It takes a special season to beat out Will Muschamp for not coach of the year.
Georgia Southern.
Yeah.
That's all. Continue.
Host meme of the year.
This one's a big one.
Dan, what the hell's a meme?
I have no idea. A host meme, a meme is a some sort of trending something that is repeated on the internet for comedic or otherwise insatiable value that people can't get enough of making fun of something with or saying or writing, or it's just some sort of trending internet something.
So we do a bunch of little memes here, if that's what
a meme is. Did Mike Hall ever figure out
the secret verbal?
The secret verbal from last week?
I don't think he did.
I don't feel like he did. And you know what? Verballers, keep going with it. Ask Mike Hall about his time playing bass for Avril Lavigne on her Complicated tour. Any stories, any reactions, any reunions? Really keep on hammering.
The best part about this, by the way, because the Verbies is arguably our most evergreen show. So much of what we do is time sensitive. If you don't listen within a week or two, a lot of the content's irrelevant.
Right.
Because people download this show heavily throughout the course of the year, I think we can now count on the fact that Mike Hall will be getting tweets about Avril Lavigne well into the next year.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
Host meme of the year. It's fitting that you mention that. The secret verbal is one of the nominees.
Your number one secret verbal?
The one we did with Tony Barnhart.
I don't think it can be topped.
I don't think that can ever be topped.
For me, it's Barnhart, and then number two, the only reason this is a close number two for me is the Bruce Feldman secret verbal, because we're friends with Bruce, and he was so confused, and that really kicked off our new wave of really weird secret verbals.
Yeah, ones that kind of have a story around them. Adam Kramer with the spelunking was fun for me.
I did enjoy that as well.
Let's keep going, though, with Mike Hall. Playing bass, Complicated tour, Avril Lavigne. Mm-hmm. Some of the tweets some of the tweets that we've seen come through have been unbelievable.
He is so confused.
He really is.
He is so confused. And he's responding kindly to people.
He stopped responding because he's gotten overwhelmed. But, pull in other Big Ten, pull in like Dave Revson, Big Ten Network, pull in other guys like, hey, has he talked to you about this at all?
Sure.
Let's get them all confused. All right.
Yeah.
The secret verbal, obviously a candidate for host meme of the year. Secret verbal, again, we give people code words, funny stories, tell them to go out and tweet people.
Yep.
You guys have been great about doing it. Number two, interviewing Lex Steele to lead off the solid verbal season. It was weird, to be honest with you.
I had a terrific time. Gangbang at the 40.
I was a bit uncomfortable with that Lex Steele interview. I'll tell the story about how we got that interview in the first place.
Yeah.
Jameis Winston, the wonderful monster.
I'm
going to
spoil
memes.
It right now.
Yeah.
Ty drives the bang bus.
There it is. There it is.
Ty has deep, deep connections.
Jameis Winston, the wonderful monster. Nomination. Bruce Feldman's body blow theory, another favorite of the show.
I did like this.
Dan creepily whispering Bortles.
Bortles.
Another nominee.
Bortles. Bortles.
The Altar of Dan. Had a great season.
Altar of Dan.
Yeah.
Called a few huge games. Nobody believed.
Yeah.
That I was a mountain, that I was a river. Altar of Dan. Thank you for worshiping.
Thank you. And then finally, the Patriot League Lightning Round.
I had a hugely fun time with the Patriot League Lightning Round this year.
I saw that the Patriot League Twitter account started following us.
Yes.
We need to get them involved
Absolutely,
intimately
we do.
Next season.
I think we could pull some strings and make you the Patriot League commissioner.
The mascot? No.
I think we can make you commissioner. I think we can get you making important decisions. How would you like to make $28,000 a year?
I shared a bag of Tostitos once with Bill Hancock. I know what it takes to do this, right?
You're a hobnobber. You're rubbing elbows. Absolutely.
Right. All right. Again, your nominees. Bortles, The Altar of Dan, Patriot League Lightning Round, interviewing Lex Steele, The Secret Verbal, Jameis Winston, The Wonderful Monster.
Wonderful Monster.
And Bruce Feldman's Body Blow. There, you dim the lights.
Dim those lights!
Your winner for Host Meme of the Year, Mr. Rubenstein. Tell the folks.
It is me whispering,
Bortles.
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 Folks,
I'm
could
so
not
sad that we don't get to do it anymore.
Folks, we can still do it.
I mean, we can still do it.
This is going to be one of those deals, and we're going to get to losing effort of the year next, but
yeah,
this is going to be one of those deals that carries with Blake Bortles as he moves on into the NFL.
Yeah.
Without a
oh,
doubt.
Oh, absolutely.
Without
I mean,
a
we'll
doubt.
Do it. We'll do a show before the NFL draft, just as we see off all of our friends from college football into the next level. And I'm sure we can mention Bortles in that regard.
Yeah.
But it's going to be sad not being able to do that every week, especially with the Knights rise.
A pretty convincing victory, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
For Blake Bortles. For your victory with Blake Bortles.
I'm pretty happy with it.
One more time.
It did me well. People seem to like it.
Bortles.
There it is. All right. Moving on.
Bortles.
Losing effort of the year. Losing effort of the year. Started a couple years ago with Nick Foles. You might remember him at Arizona.
Yep.
Had a plethora of 400-yard games. The problem was his team sucked and they couldn't win.
This one was a close one.
We started talking about losing efforts of the year. We gave it to Nick Foles the first year, created an award in his honor.
Mm-hmm.
Here are your nominees for losing effort of this past year. Number one, Wisconsin versus Arizona State.
Yeah.
And crooked referees. So
absolutely.
This one already won. Could be a multiple Verby winner. Losing effort of the year. Wisconsin against both Arizona State and those crooked
refs. I want
to
say that effort was particularly seen on the ground for Wisconsin that day.
Yeah, of course. Aaron Murray versus everyone else in the SEC and
that was tough.
Numerous injuries on his own team, Dan.
Yeah, that's sort of an Aaron Murray and sort of Georgia health combined. Yeah,
if Aaron Murray doesn't go down himself, I think the likelihood of him winning this award goes up a little bit more because he didn't lose by much.
True. Absolutely.
Derek Carr versus San Jose State. Remember that game?
19 touchdown passes that night.
At least.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got two from the Texas A&M Alabama game.
Right.
And I wonder if there might be a splitting of the vote going
That's
on.
That's what I was thinking
two.
When I was looking at the nominees because they're related.
First and foremost, you have Johnny Manziel. For mm-hmm. his efforts against the Alabama Crimson Tide, a wild game, week three, college football, 464 yards through the air, 5 touchdowns, also 98 yards on the ground, combined the two, well over 500 total yards. Manziel had 2 bad picks in that football game,
yep.
but damn near willed the team to victory because they didn't do much on the ground without him. They certainly needed his efforts through the air. He threw most of those passes, by the way, to a gentleman by the name of Mike Evans, a huge wide receiver
down.
Who caught the ball 7 times for 279 yards and a touchdown, had a 95-yard score, which sort of made things really interesting late in the football game, again, between Alabama and Texas A&M. Evans now going pro. This was a game that certainly put him on the map at the time. I don't know if we realized that Alabama's cornerbacks maybe not as good as we were accustomed to seeing in previous years. But still, anytime you can log 7 catches for 279 yards, that's a pretty damn good effort.
It's not bad. That is not bad. I'm wondering, because it was such a close vote here.
Yeah.
Is the person that came in second place the real winner?
Ooh.
Because it's their effort in this category in a losing effort.
Ooh.
It's very... I don't know. That's very esoteric and inside. I don't know. Let's see. What do we have here, Ty?
Dim the lights.
Dim those lights.
Your winner for losing effort of the year. Play it one more time.
Done.
Losing effort of the year. Your verbi goes to... Johnny Manziel.
Had to be.
Wow.
Had to be.
Folks were writing in saying it's got to be Mike Evans. And I'm looking at these thinking, huh? It's got to be Johnny Manziel.
It's got to be Johnny Manziel. He did a little bit of losing. He did a lot of bit of effort in this game.
But he threw two interceptions. I don't care.
No.
All those yards, Johnny Manziel.
All part of the effort. The losing effort.
Twitter feed of the year. Another one.
Twitter feed of the year.
A lot of repeat nominations in this category.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Who won last year?
We were incorrect. I was going to say we were incorrect on one of our shows that we did in Southern California when we wrongfully said that Celebrity Hot Tub won this category last year.
I wasn't sure when you said it. I didn't really remember, so I didn't say anything. Was it Spencer Hall who won it last year?
Right. I have like a 5-hour window in which my short-term memory
is sharp.
I have too much going on. I was dead wrong. Spencer Hall won this award last year, not Celebrity Hot Tub.
You want to know a fun fact about the Spencer Hall Twitter feed, EDSBS?
Fun fact.
In the past year, I had never heard this before. A lot of people have said, oh, yeah, Spencer Hall. But why is his Twitter feed Ed's BS? As if there was a guy named Ed just BSing on Twitter. And it made sense to very little people. Very few people, excuse me.
Yeah, okay.
And I suppose very little people as well.
Sure, of course.
Yeah. But no, Celebrity Hot Tub did not win the 2012 Verbi.
He was a nomination this year. So a lot of repeat nominees this year. Spencer Hall, not one of them.
No.
Not on the list this year.
Interesting.
Yeah, perhaps a sea change here in the world of Twitter. We'll see.
Yeah.
Your nominees, Dan Beebe. That's @@ Shift 2. Dan.
Hold on, I'm writing this down.
The shift key and number 2, Dan.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, that works.
D-A-N-B-E-E-B-E. Fake Dan Beebe. You might remember the real Dan Beebe as the much maligned former commissioner of the Big 12 Conference.
You say fake, Ty, but I haven't seen any proof.
Fake Dan Beebe. Very funny on the Twitters.
Yes.
Celebrity Hot Tub.
Ryan Hot Tub.
You heard him on the show.
Yeah. You heard him splashing around.
Might have been better than both of us, quite frankly.
Yeah, probably.
Very good at what he does. Follow him. Mm-hmm. @CelebrityHotTub. Again, shift 2, Celebrity Hot Tub.
See, he has the luxury of having something you don't. And that's a mysterious day job in which he can find time to do some tweeting.
Right. No, I can't.
Also, he's anonymous, and that makes it a lot easier. It
also helps.
Yeah.
But no, it's very strong Twitter game.
Yes.
Evil Bill O'Brien has since changed his name to something to do with James Franklin, of course.
Really? Okay.
Evil Bill O'Brien on this list. Sort of the alter ego for Bill O'Brien, what he's really thinking, what he can't say aloud. Very funny Twitter feed. And then Faux Pelini, that's F-A-U-X, Pelini, which I should point out, had this voting taken place at a different point in time, there is a chance that Faux Pelini would have garnered more votes because do you remember a few weeks back, the actual Bo Pelini tweeted at Faux Pelini because Faux Pelini in his Twitter avatar has a picture of Bo Pelini holding a cat.
Right.
The real Bo Pelini sent a message to fake Bo Pelini saying, listen, enough's enough. I want my cat back. If the voting took place at a different point in time, maybe there would have been a different result.
Maybe it swung. The Faux Pelini, and it's really hard. It is really difficult to pull off a parody account. And all three of these parody accounts, Pelini, Beebe, and O'Brien, are fantastic. Faux Pelini is amazing.
Faux Pelini is very good.
And a lot of people try to do it, and it's really difficult, and it's uncomfortable to read people trying to do this. But these three pull it off in a tremendous way.
I also remember very clearly an interview we did with Dan Wetzel talking about his interactions with the fake Dan Beebe.
Yes.
This is from a couple years ago when this Twitter account was a lot more relevant. But these are all guys who do a really good job. Dan, let's dim the lights.
Dim those lights.
Your nominees again, Twitter feed of the year. Dan Beebe, Evil Bill O'Brien, Faux Pelini. Our friend Celebrity Hot Tub, Daniel. Here is the envelope. Who wins?
Celebrity Hot Tub.
Celebrity Hot Tub. He finally gets one.
Congratulations to Ryan.
Wow.
Writes for SB Nation, writes for EDSBS, has appeared on this show, appeared in my parents' jacuzzi.
Yeah.
Nobody invited him.
No.
But he just showed up, and no, he runs a fantastic Twitter feed and should be commended for all of his wackiness as it relates to college football and otherwise. A local to New York, Mr. Hot Tub enjoys graham crackers and chocolate milk as his drunk food combination of choice, as revealed on the Solid Verbal.
Is that the back of his baseball card?
That is the back of his baseball card.
Oh, my. Okay. Well, congratulations to him.
Yeah. Well-deserved.
Tire Fire of the Year. We're coming down the stretch here.
Tire Fire. Tire Fire of the Year.
The Tire Fire, actually a meme that has graduated into a verbi, much like Losing Effort of the Year.
Yes.
We talked about Tire Fires countless times in this program. Started indeed. A couple years ago. Last year, we had the funny keyboard. For those of you who remember the live show we did on YouTube with the help of SB Nation, Tire Fire is our way of saying something's really wrong with your program, with your administration, with your on-field product, with whatever. There is something burning out of control, and a tire fire can get ugly and smelly and can be very difficult to put out. It just
It's the exact opposite of a shorty fire burning on the dance floor.
Of course.
Which is a fire you want.
Of
course. A shorty fire that's burning on the dance floor. You do not want a tire fire.
Tire Fire of the Year. We have four nominees, Daniel.
Hit me.
Number one, Florida. The Gators.
I'm gonna spoil something right now.
Yeah.
Not a hotly contested category.
No.
Lot of voting, but a pretty lopsided vote for this category. Continue.
Candidate 2, Purdue.
Ooh. Ugly. Ugly 2013.
Had a new coach.
Yes, they did.
You know, you got to give them a little bit of time. It was ugly. I'll give you that. It was very ugly. A bit of a tire fire.
The worst of trestle ball.
But, you know, still kind of unfair for Purdue to be in this list, I think.
Okay.
Northwestern.
Yeah.
That was a
tire fire of pretty epic proportions with how beat up they were and the sort of dip they took when those injuries really started to take hold.
Good enough to win some games that they didn't win.
Yeah.
You know, good enough to beat Ohio State, I thought, earlier in the year.
Yeah.
Didn't come to fruition, but they certainly were in that game until the very end, and then we saw...
I would still contend that a healthy Northwestern is flirting with double-digit wins.
Sure.
Still contending.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah. But a lot of heartbreaking last seconds.
Yeah.
Went
on a slide there after the Ohio State game. Could never get it together. Staying in the Big Ten, how about Michigan?
Michigan.
Is this fair to put them in here?
It is absolutely fair, just because of the lows of their ability to run the ball, coupled with the fact that they played games against UConn and Akron that they were... If you walk away from a UConn or an Akron game in the modern era, not years where they've been decent, where they've been terrible like they are this year, and you're Michigan with the kind of talent that Michigan has, and you walk away with like, wow, Michigan snuck away with a surprise win there.
Yeah.
That's bad. That's terrible, terrible tire fiery news.
All right. And again, your nominees, Tire Fire of the Year, Florida, Northwestern, Michigan, and Purdue. Dim the lights,
guys. Yes. Damn.
Tire Fire of the Year. On a cold January night, the tires that are burning, the tires that are warming us.
We need the warmth.
Congratulations, your Florida Gators.
Oh, yeah.
Will Muschamp didn't win Coach of the Year, but Florida wins Tire Fire of the Year by astounding...
Like not winning director, but winning Best Picture of the Year.
An astounding 85% of the votes in this category went to Florida. By far, it was the least contested category, Florida wins again. Tire Fire of the Year. Congratulations.
All of
to
the votes came from the state of Florida. All people, of the votes came from Gainesville.
People were clearing their cookies and voting multiple times if possible to get Florida the Tire Fire of the Year. Mm-hmm. Congratulations, guys. That brings us to the Capstone Award.
Yes.
Here on the Solid Verbal, we do many. Clemson of the Year for us is still, for better or worse, and I know there are people who will disagree with it,
right,
but there are many people out there who feel we invented the term Clemsoning. Now, we will be the first to say we did not invent the term Clemsoning. What we did do, though, through this podcast, and because we have thousands upon thousands of listeners, we did help popularize the term Clemson, Clemsoning, Clemsoned. We did put that on Urban Dictionary, and we did have that on ESPN. So Clemson and Clemsonings of the Year is very much something that we are actively part of each and every college football season since we started back in 2008. Is that fair to say?
Fair to say.
Clemson, Clemson of the Year.
Very quickly, Dan, what is a Clemson of the Year? What constitutes a Clemson of the Year?
A Clemson of the Year rewards or puts down a season in which a team came into the year with hype, raised that hype up and raised expectations over the course of the season, and at an unexpected moment, at a time where nobody was expecting this team to lose, they go ahead and waste that hype and those expectations.
Give me the envelope. Let's read the nominees here. Number one, Stanford. Stanford, I feel a very appropriate nominee in this category. Had that bad loss to Utah earlier in the year.
Huge expectations. They're winning. Things are looking good. They beat Washington, a game that could have gone either way. Close game at the end. They get by Washington. Then they go on the road the following week, lay an egg.
Another Pac-12 nominee. How about your Oregon Ducks, Dan?
Oregon. Don't quite understand this as a Clemson of the Year because they go undefeated and then they lose to Stanford at Stanford. But one loss does not a season erase, and Oregon was still very much in contention for not just a Pac-12 crown with Stanford's second loss to USC, but also a national championship run, even though it's hard to say, but Auburn probably would have leapfrogged Oregon depending on what happened in the Pac-12 championship game. In any case, Oregon loses to Arizona unceremoniously, a team that was up and down all season long, finished the season strong, but going on the road and losing the way they did to Arizona while still in contention for a conference and or national championship, pretty inexcusable with the fashion in which they lost.
First two nominees in this category finished the year with 11 wins.
Yeah.
Very difficult to put
them
in this category. Moving on, let's go to Northwestern.
Yep.
I don't know if it's appropriate to put Northwestern in this category, but
it's tough.
When you're
trading a non-Clemson teams for the Clemson of the Year.
Yeah.
It's a tough task.
It's funny you should mention that, Dan. Our next nominee is the Clemson Tigers.
Clemson.
This is not fair. The only reason Clemson is in this category is because the award is duly named after the Clemson Tigers. Clemson lost to Florida State.
Yes.
They got hammered by Florida State. Within the context of that game, it was a Clemsoning. Not because they lost, but because how badly
Correct.
They lost. But throughout the course of a season, for Clemson to be here in this category, I don't know. I don't know if I agree with it. Maybe for the first time ever. I don't know.
So we have three double-digit win teams so far?
Yeah.
The problem to me, or the reason why Clemson is in this category, is because of the way, not just that they lost the Florida State game, which was at home. So if we were to believe that Clemson was a top five team at that time, which was not an unreasonable thought.
Of course.
From what they did, they really looked very good against a healthy Georgia team in the opener of the season. But to lose in that fashion as a purported top five team at home to, granted, the eventual national champion, but to lose by that many and that quickly and in that ugly a fashion, there's an argument to be made that there were expectations that were far too high for what they showed on the field that night.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
Okay.
And then
turning the ball over five or six times against South Carolina probably wasn't ideal. Not ideal.
And then there's Georgia.
Georgia.
You know, I might have cast my vote for Georgia here. And there were some Clemsonings that occur just because a team can't get up for a game. The prototypical Clemsoning is when you don't have injuries and you have a lot of momentum. And then all of a sudden you just come out there and inexplicably lay a stinker on like a Thursday night.
Yeah.
Georgia didn't really have many of those, but Georgia really let people down. Georgia had a ton of injuries. As we said earlier, eventually Aaron Murray even succumbed to injury, but Georgia let a lot of people down, came in actually with that game against Clemson with very, very high expectations first week of the year. They lost that game.
But didn't build expectations throughout the course of the season.
Did not build throughout the course of the season. Very slowly bled.
Yes, they did. Or very quickly bled with the injuries that they suffered.
They bled out one way or the other. Your nominees, Clemson of the year, Northwestern, Oregon, Stanford, Clemson, and Georgia. Dan, dim the lights.
I do like that we have Georgia as a nominee, and they were the most insane play of the season away, or the insanely improbable play of the season away from beating the SEC champion.
A very tough category. Road. Very tough category.
Yeah.
Entirely subjective. Five nominees. Dan, the lights have been dimmed.
Lights dimmed.
Drum roll, please. Dan, I am handing the envelope to you. Clemson of the year, the Verbi goes to.
Verbi goes to Oregon.
Yeah!
No!
After all this time, the Ducks finally win something, Dan. No longer paper champs.
Whoa.
Your Oregon
Alamo
Ducks.
Alamo Bowl champion.
Oh, well.
Oregon Ducks.
Well, stand off, son. Alamo
stand
Bowl
down.
Champions, also Clemson of the year. Congratulations. Do you have any acceptance speech? Would you like to accept on behalf of your proud alma mater?
I'd like to accept on behalf of the Oregon linebacking corps, who were goaded and misled repeatedly by Rich Rodriguez and the offensive system in place at the University of Arizona. I would like to thank them for overrunning plays, for getting swallowed up into blocks, not getting off of blocks. I'd like to thank defensive line coach and defensive coordinator Nick Aliotti and Ron Aiken for not adjusting anything at the half. Just a real group effort on the part of that defense. I'd like to thank Marcus Mariota's torn MCL for the role it played.
Yeah.
We're calling it Manny the MCL.
Okay. You've named
in
it
this season. You can't, it's one of those things where you accept award at the Oscars. You can't just thank the cast and crew. I mean, so much goes into it. Your agents and your managers and, you know, your kids and your wife for all the support, or your husband, whatever the case may be. It really was a group effort on the part of the Oregon defense and coaching staff. And enough can be said. Enough can be said.
One of the things that I am most looking forward to,
mm-hmm,
as we forge ahead now into 2014,
good Lord,
is watching you slowly and surely find ways to jump off the Mark Helfrich bandwagon. And you're not on, no one's really got a bandwagon for Mark Helfrich, but
no, I think people are on a Helfrich bandwagon, that the sort of like give him time to get used to it,
yep,
and
yep,
sort of managing a staff. Those you, types of people are
you,
there.
You have never been on that bandwagon, Dan. You've always been very cautious and almost cynical about his chances up there in Eugene. I am curious to watch you evolve as a human, as a man, as a host.
Well, I'm not going to evolve as a man.
Okay.
The evolution is done.
As a host and as an Oregon fan, then.
Yeah, I mean, no, look, and this is it could be changing for the better. And, you know, Mark Helfrich comes out and Oregon beats the crap out of a Stanford team that lost a ton of people up in Eugene next year, and beats Michigan State in Eugene. And, you know, with a full offseason to figure out what he's done right and wrong, and what which coaches should be doing what, and what players should be playing where, and how to fill in gaps and fix what went wrong with assignments. Maybe it's changing me for the better that I'm going to be super impressed and way more impressed than I was this first season, or at least in the back half of the season. That's entirely possible. Also entirely possible, I lose my damn mind.
There it is.
Scott Frost. Ugh.
That concludes the 2013-2014 Verbi Awards. Can you believe this is our fifth Verbi Award, Dan?
Unbelievable. I still remember when we were Were we Verbi hosts?
Where does the time go, Dan?
Where does it go?
Congratulations again to your victors. Again, very quickly, Eminem's interview with Saturday Night Football, Brent Musburger, Kirk Herbstreit, Jadeveon Clowney for worst year back, the officiating in the Wisconsin ASU game, crime of the year. Baylor's black and chrome uniforms win alternate uniform of the year.
Hotly contested.
Zach Mettenberger and Aaron Murray once being roommates is your random factoid that still may only interest Tom Hammond.
Mm-hmm. And I believe Zach Mettenberger's mother worked for or works for the University of Georgia still.
It's a Festivus miracle indeed.
That was a tack on to that one. Yeah,
of course. Wave Rider, name of the year.
Yeah.
Got a BS targeting call in the bowl game. I watched that game.
Yeah, it's not, they still beat Middle Tennessee.
They did. Not coach of the year goes to Lane Kiffin. Big surprise.
Argue.
Host meme of the year, Dan?
Bortles.
Twitter feed of the year, celebrity hot tub. Losing effort of the year, Johnny Manziel against Alabama. Tire fire of the year in resounding fashion is your Florida Gators. And Clemson of the year once more goes to your Oregon Ducks. There you have it.
Whatever.
2013-2014 Verbies. Big thanks again to the Verbies Ninja Squadron. They helped organize the show, as they always do. Helped organize the nominees. Helped organize all the voting. We couldn't have done this without them. Big thanks to our good friend Jason, who put together the very fine voiceover work that you heard. Big thanks to all of our participants, for all of our nominees, for all of the Verballers for making this possible. Mr. Rubenstein, it's always fun.
It was a terrific. Where are you going? I had a terrific time, by the way. Thank you for having me, as always. Where are you going for the your Verbi after party?
Verbi after party will be at the historic Hotel Bethlehem.
Okay.
We're having the New York strip steak.
Okay. How is that being cooked?
I'm going to go medium. I don't usually go medium, but I'm going to go medium.
I go medium with my steaks. Where do you usually go?
Usually go medium well, but I'm feeling dangerous tonight after this show.
Medium well. Come on, Ty. Go dangerous. You gotta get a little bit pink. A little bit of pink.
We're gonna go strip steak. I believe they have some candied baby carrots.
Okay.
Also, there's some sort of casserole, which I'm not sure what it is. I'll be sure to update Andy Staples as soon as I see if it's like a hash brown casserole or a green bean casserole. There will be some of that. And then, of course, it's an open bar. It's like a 6-hour open bar.
Yeah, well, we like to drink here on the Verbies.
Of course.
I'm going to have one and be passed out, but yeah, I think we're going to have a good time.
I'm going to play Snoot and go to bed is what I'm going to do. All right.
You know what I have for you?
Yeah.
It wouldn't be a special solid verbal if I didn't have this for you.
Please.
I have a hypothetical question for you to end this show.
You do?
I'm going to stretch your brain muscles.
Okay.
If we're not ending a show with a weird question, we're not doing it right.
All right. Okay.
Hotly spoken of.
Yeah.
At SB Nation Studios in New York, New York. If you are to, on a special occasion.
Yeah, special occasion.
You're familiar with the, you know, I think it's sort of like the old tradition of strippers popping out of cakes.
Of course.
If you were going to pop out of a non-dessert giant dish of a food for sexiness reasons, what dish is that?
Pumpkin pie.
Pumpkin pie.
Pumpkin pie.
Why is that?
It's the most sensual of all desserts.
Is it? I'm going to rephrase this, Ty, one more time.
Yeah.
Non-dessert.
Non-dessert. Okay.
Non-dessert.
That puts a spin on it then.
Entree, appetizer, whatever. Now, keep in mind, if it's for sexiness purposes, you're probably not wearing a ton of clothes.
Right.
So you got to sort of figure out temperatures.
Does whipped cream count as dessert?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. Non-dessert.
Non-dessert.
This is me? I'm popping out of this?
You are the one popping out.
Okay. Okay.
For your lovely lady friend.
Okay. I'm sure she'd be very thrilled.
Yes. It's sort of like you go to a restaurant. I'm going to paint a scene for you.
Paint a scene. Okay.
You go to a restaurant and basically you are saying, I'll meet you at the restaurant, sit down, have a glass of wine. I'm going to be a little bit late.
Yeah.
Waiter rolls out a giant novelty-sized dish of X. Of not X like ecstasy, but X.
Right.
Like an algebraic equation.
Right.
And it is a giant plate of this food, fill in the blank, and it's very startling to your lady friend And then all of a sudden, you pop out.
The answer, of course, is lasagna.
Lasagna is not a bad answer. It's the scalding hot factor. It's the cheese burns.
Lasagna is the answer here.
Okay, that's fair.
Final answer.
You know what? Because I think you could actually find a lasagna that's comically large. Like, I don't think...
My mom could make one that's comically large.
Right. I feel like a lasagna could be made or assembled with multiple trays where it's like, oh, it's a giant Italian party. It's a giant Italian wedding or function or whatever, where it's like you do have this novelty, like comically sized lasagna. And you could just emerge from that lasagna.
I mean, what, do you have a pick for this?
I waffled. I really feel like it would be interesting to wheel up like a cauldron if it's not scalding hot of like French onion soup.
But you see, then you got to hold your breath. You could potentially drown if you're in there.
Well, if there's space between the soup and the cheese that coat the top of the vat,
right?
If there's some sort of hole, then I feel like the breathability factor is nice, because whoever expects a semi-nude Dan Rubenstein to emerge from a giant vat of French onion soup? Very few people, I would say.
The hazard, though, with French onion soup is the melted cheese on the top. You must,
yeah.
You must penetrate through,
yes,
the top of that,
mm-hmm,
and not be drowned.
I feel like nachos are a good option. Because even if you were
potentially
rolled out,
potentially abrasive on the skin, though, Dan.
Potentially abrasive, a lot of oil, if they're not scalding hot. I feel like nachos are a food that people like so much that they wouldn't have a problem eating them off of your semi-nude body. I don't think that's
getting
not unreasonable.
Weird.
Getting weird, but that's what we do.
Big thanks again to all the Verballers who, again, emailed in, voted, made the Verbies possible. Big thanks again to the Verbies Ninja Squadron. For that guy over there, Mr. Dan Rubenstein in blustery New York City. For myself, Ty, here in beautiful Allentown, Pennsylvania. Thanks again for another great season. Thanks again for all your participation and certainly all your downloads. In the meantime, we'll see you when we see you. Please stay solid.
Peace!